what we know.
Today's Wednesday.
I hear voices.
What you're hearing is
my new favorite show.
Oh, God, no. These guys are horrible.
I love those guys.
Opinions differ.
Remember, the show is free.
And I expect to be delighted.
Let's do a show right now. What are we doing?
It's showtime.
TSN 1200.
It is showtime. Hour 4 underway. How's it going, everybody? 9:10 on this Wednesday morning. JR, Simmer, Hammer, Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com. Going to join us in just a couple of minutes. Don't forget, the Ravens and the Steelers will finally play their game this afternoon at 3:40. The Ravens flew to Pittsburgh last night. Would you know it? Two more members of the organization, a player and a staff member, tested positive yesterday. So we're going back. When was number one on the list? That's well over a week now, right? And in totality, it's been over 20 players and staff members of the Ravens have been put into quarantine. In fact, it's been so long that some of the players who were on the COVID-19 list have actually had time enough to come off.
Yeah.
A couple of running backs, Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins, are actually eligible to play in the game today. That's how long this Ravens outbreak, which has been, when it's all said and done, the biggest so far amongst all the NFL teams. Will it end up being the biggest when it's all said and done, or as the pandemic continues to rage on and grow, especially in the United States, are we going to see another team or teams that go through a similar circumstance? And eventually, is the NFL going to have to either move a game to the end of the season or just call it off altogether?
Yeah, and you trace this back, JR, all the way to a strength coach, and now your MVP from last year, Lamar Jackson, you're sitting at 6-4, pretty good chance you're going to end up losing this afternoon, and that could be the end of your season.
To the Gabriel Pizza Hotline we go, where we welcome Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com. How are you doing this morning, Josh?
Great. How are you guys?
Excellent, thanks. Appreciate you joining us. So this is the final game of Week 12. How surprised are you, based on where we've come from and to where we are now, that all 32 teams have been able to play, well, in some cases 12, but in most cases all 11 of their games?
Well, I think it's probably would have gotten longer odds on something happening, but I think, you see this week how hard the NFL has worked to make sure every game gets played. It was easier earlier in the season to move some stuff around with buys. You know, that's obviously not a possibility now. And I think everyone would like to avoid that week 18 scenario where, you know, then you start talking about adding playoff teams and other things get involved that make this even messier. But, you know, I think that when you see how hard they've worked to make this happen and to push a game, essentially to push a game a full week, in order to make it happen, shows that the NFL is going to do anything it can to get this season, you know, slam this season in and get it done. And with 5 weeks to go, you have to like their chances of getting it done if these are the kinds of steps they're willing to take.
We've just passed American Thanksgiving, Josh. Christmas is on the horizon. Unfortunately, is the worst to come as far as COVID?
You know, that's what the health officials are saying, but I think you're going to start seeing teams, you know, you saw that everybody took a 2-day break other than the Ravens and Steelers here to kick off this week and, you know, stay out of the facilities and clear some time. And you'd hope that everyone's following better practices than we saw with the Ravens and the Broncos in the last couple of weeks. And I wouldn't be surprised if teams start moving to quasi bubbles for certain, you know, certain stretches of time. You're going to see it with the 49ers having to go on the road here. And it wouldn't surprise me if other teams start doing something similar and just having, especially teams that are looking at the playoffs and get everybody into a hotel and, you know, really just commit to, you know, a single-minded focus to grind this out through the end of the season and get it done. And then hopefully, you know, with vaccines and everything else, this is the last we'll have to deal with it.
Talking to Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com. Do you think that we're going to see, in the NFL, it seems like every week they're coming out with more and more rules as far as mask wearing on the sidelines, but even as you mentioned, shutting down the team facilities for the first 2 weeks or first 2 days of this week. We're going to get to a stage where the teams themselves are going to start isolating a player. In particular, I think maybe quarterbacks, based on what happened with Denver, where that's going to be maybe the rule that they may go by going forward, is they'll just do everything virtually with their quarterback, just not wanting to expose him and the possibility they may have to miss a game.
Yeah, you know, some teams have done that. Some teams have done that all year, and I think that it's a wise way to go. I think you've seen teams stashing extra specialists on the practice squad so that if something happens with a kicker, a punter, you're not left with, you know, with a running back trying to make a field goal or something like that. I think it would behoove every team to do that. I was frankly surprised to hear that Broncos coach Vic Fangio said that they're not going to start doing that. That seems a little bit crazy to me that after having that experience that you wouldn't go and say to one of the quarterbacks on the team, all right, you're just not around these guys. You're not physically around these guys. You're part of the team. We need you, and that's why we're going to have you, you know, sit by yourself in a room somewhere and take part in all the meetings because we can't have this situation happen for us.
Aside from COVID, have the Ravens been one of the biggest disappointments so far this year, Josh?
I think they have been because I think you wanted to see that offense evolve and grow, and it hasn't. And it is nowhere near as effective as it was last year. They're not as effective running the ball, clearly, and they haven't taken a step forward as a passing team, and that's been a big disappointment. And I think in these last few weeks, you've seen teams pay a little bit less respect to that run game that was so effective last year and effective very early this year. I think that it's been a disappointing year for Baltimore because anytime you don't move forward in the NFL, it's a disappointment. And that's where they are. And they're a team that's stuck that if things don't get better over the final weeks of the season, you're going to have a lot of questions to answer this offseason about the overall direction that they're going to take because they need to see Lamar Jackson grow as a passer and they need to see a way a way forward with him as that franchise quarterback. You're getting close to making decisions about a long-term future with him. And it seems crazy. He was the MVP last year, but if it isn't just, you know, losing some key offensive linemen, obviously, you know, Marshall Yanda retired before the season, Ronnie Stanley went out for the year. Those are huge losses and they didn't rebound from them well. Is that a big part of it? That's all evaluation the Ravens are going to have to do.
Greg Roman is the offensive coordinator for the Ravens, and I remember last year as Lamar Jackson was having this unbelievable year, he was getting a lot of credit for some of the, you know, some of the schemes of what they were doing offensively. How much of this lies on the fact that the Ravens haven't maybe evolved their offense enough? Because as we know in the NFL, the defensive coordinators and head coaches get enough of a look at an offense, they'll figure out a way to stop them, and you've got to continue to evolve as an offense to keep ahead of the defenses.
Well, I think that's certainly an issue, and I think it is not one that was easy to pull off in this offseason with how little time you really had to work with players on the field and how little time you had to implement big new systems. You had no preseason games to work with. I think all of those things are factors in the offense, perhaps not taking new forms, but I think that it only goes, you know, that only goes so far to explain it. Look, you watch them play week to week. There are opportunities there, and they're not making plays. They're not executing at the same high level that they had in the past. They're turning the ball over more. All of these things are huge factors, and I don't think you can put that all on coaching. I think there's some of it, but I think there are questions about the players that they have and whether they can take on those new roles. And again, it always comes back to the quarterback in the NFL, and it's going to fall on Lamar Jackson heavier than anyone else.
And to your point, is it a little surprising as you look under the hood how thin they are at the skill positions around Lamar Jackson?
Well, you know, look, they've tried with the receivers. They've drafted a bunch of receivers over the last 2 years. But, yeah, when you're going and signing Dez Bryant in the middle of the season, it's a pretty damning assessment of the guys that you have and the chemistry that Lamar Jackson has with them. You know, all you heard from the Ravens all offseason was how much Marquise Brown was going to do for them this year. And he hasn't. He hasn't arrived like that. And some of that's on Jackson, some of that's on Brown, some's on Roman. But yeah, they came in this three-headed monster at running back. Mark Ingram looks washed. Gus Edwards and J.K. J.K. Dobbins has looked great, but they don't have that same depth of the attack, and that running game just isn't forcing teams to leave these streaking receivers wide open down the field. They're not challenging teams the same way, and that may get to the offensive line. But it's a multi-system failure for the Ravens, and it's one that's going to take probably more than the next 5 weeks to figure out.
Talking to Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com. So if they're able to get through the rest of the regular season, we're going to have an expanded playoff of at least seven teams in each conference. And if they eventually have to cancel some games, maybe even an eighth team. But regardless, do you think that the NFL will move to a NBA/NHL-style bubble for the playoffs? They'll have maybe the each of the two conferences play all of their games out of one stadium and isolate teams in hotels, etc.?
You know, as of now, I think it'd be more likely that you're going to have team bubbles and keep everything, you know, that each team is in a hotel. All they're doing is going from the hotel to the team facility and back, and then traveling if they have to, and still playing at home. But I think that's a real possibility. If you have another Ravens type outbreak, I think that's going to have to be something that moves to the forefront of the conversation, because you're not going to be able to do that in the playoffs. That the competitive imbalance of it would be just impossible to, you know, to rectify in that situation. And you can't have, you know, you don't want to have a game. You don't want to have the Chiefs playing the Steelers in the AFC Championship game with no Patrick Mahomes or Ben Roethlisberger because, you know, they've been on the COVID list for a positive test or contact with someone who has it.
And on the Steelers side, Josh, how good has that chemistry been between Chase Claypool and Big Ben this year?
It's been great, and I think the chemistry between Ben and Juju's been great, and Deontay Johnson. I think that it really was last year that, you know, watching the team and they, I think, equipped themselves much better than anybody expected with Mason Rudolph and Devlin Hodges at quarterback. And that was the big question: is if Roethlisberger comes back, is he going to be the same guy, and is it going to make, you know, is it going to make these receivers, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster had a down year, is it going to make him back to what he was? And you look at what's happened this year, and it's just a resounding yes. He's, you know, everything has clicked for them offensively, and it's gotten better and better as the year has gone on. And they obviously, that defense, the way they rush passers, is just an incredible weapon. I don't know that it makes them a favorite in my mind over the Chiefs, but I certainly would love to see that game in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Final one for you. I saw the ratings came out yesterday for the Thanksgiving. The Washington-Dallas game on Thanksgiving Day, the highest-rated NFL game this season. And that includes all the primetime games and games between good teams, not also-ran. I mean, what does that say, Josh, about, how much Americans love football on Thanksgiving, but, B, the power of the brand of the NFC East and the Dallas Cowboys in particular, that's still a highly-rated game, even though it was between two really bad teams?
You know, don't underrate what 8 months of quarantine with a family does when it's Thanksgiving either.
Good point.
You're giving thanks for something else to do.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, the Dallas Cowboy brand is apparently unsulliable because, I mean, if people are turning in droves to watch that game, you know, the Cowboys could put really anything on the field and their star would not be diminished. It's a testament to the brand that they've built, if not the team that they've built in Dallas.
Absolutely. Appreciate the time and the insight, as always. Thanks a lot, and we'll chat down the road.
Have a good one.
All right, you too. There's Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com and the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, JR. Also, hey, the size of the Giants market and the tradition they end up having. What's also interesting as far as timing of a day, if you're in the United States, it's a little bit like the bowl games where you don't necessarily know who's playing in the Rose Bowl, JR, but for 4 o'clock, a lot of people eat in the afternoon. Nobody wants to watch that first game that the Lions are involved in.
Right.
And that 4 o'clock almost sets up as destination TV. And hey, certainly the brand of the two, you're so right. But it's also interesting just the timing of that. And I guess at that time as well, people realized they weren't going to have an opportunity to feast on a little Ravens-Steelers at 8 o'clock.
True. That's a good point. But I do think, and more sort of Dallas, certainly, than Washington.
Oh, for sure.
Or make fun of what's going on in the NFC East, and for good reason, those are... four incredibly popular franchises, with huge fan bases.
Yeah, and I don't know what the numbers are, but I really enjoy watching the Dallas games because they're such intriguing. Jerry Jones, I don't want to say it's completely gone away, but look at how quickly it's evaporated for the Patriots, who actually have a better record than the Cowboys, right?
Yes.
I mean, I don't think there's any... including myself, Mr. Bandwagon, that's actually searching for Patriots games every Sunday.
Hey? Steelers-Ravens is at 3:30 or 3:40, I guess, is kickoff. TSN Television, CTV2 have the television coverage of the game today for you. And we'll do some live listen-ins during our drive show with Ian Mendez and Lever Sage this afternoon for you as well. We'll take a break when we come back. More, who's the most famous person you've met by circumstance, non-sports related, in your life? Got a pile of texts on that. We'll power through those. We'll do This Day in Sports History. Celebrate some sports birthdays as we continue along here on a midweek Wednesday morning on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Voice to keep them entertained.
Is he the fellow that went on the mentor trip with old Doogie Howser last year with the Leafs? I thought that was so goofy. Like, honestly, like, this whole parent, you know, it's about mentors or family or somebody else. And it's like, I want to show off. And I remember the guy from the Arkells, they interviewed him, said, why are you on the trip? He says, I have no idea. like, seriously. Don't you know what I mean? Like, come on, man. Hey.
Yeah, and you're right. It's Max Kerman. So did he perform? Was he the opening act to the Rock, Paper, Scissors tournament the players did virtually?
Yeah, could be.
Or did that come after? Hey?
Oh, those poor guys.
I'm rolling. If I'm Team Canada, I'm firing up whatever they played last spring. Was it Stand By Me or that beautiful song they ended up doing at the when they did that online Canadian music festival? Remember the tune they played at the M Boys?
Yes, at the Junos.
The virtual concert they had. Tune they played at the end. Every time that comes on the radio, I love it.
All right, so we've been asking you this morning, famous people that you've met by circumstance in your life, mostly non-sports related, although if it's by circumstance and it's a sports person, we don't mind that as well. All right, so we got a pile of these have come in. I once ran into Kevin O'Leary at a Notre Dame tailgate. I ended up spending the entire day with him.
Yeah. Shark
Great
Tank guy.
Guy? That's from Sean. John, yeah, that's Shark Tank guy.
Shark Tank guy.
He's a bad boat driver.
Opposite for me, I met the other one, Dennis O'Leary, at the Hall of Fame back in the day. We're at the Westin Hotel, and a bunch of guys, JR, had come up from Boston and Rhode Island that I knew because the old cam machine, Seabass, was being inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And we're waiting by the bar, and they're going to have this little private party. There's 10 of these guys from Rhode Island. And if Dennis O'Leary, they just said, listen.
It's just Dennis Leary, right?
Dennis O'Leary, sorry. Yeah. Can I get a picture with you? And he just buzzed right by them. And same thing for the cam man. Like, didn't even have a second to actually.
Cam Neely?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
No interest at all.
Wow.
They were just headed off to a little private room there at the Westin behind the bar. And that was pretty sad.
I guess he took his role on Dumb and Dumber to heart there because he played quite the douche in that movie as well.
Well, and that's the Farrelly brothers from Rhode Island, right, that ended up producing those movies. They were up there that weekend as well and were super friendly. They do a whole lot of men's league hockey. One of them's a goaltender. Went to Yale University. They were good with the boys.
His name was Seabass.
Yeah.
Unsigned text at 12-1200. I met two heroes years apart. First, Jeff Healey at a bar in Toronto, and then Stevie Wonder in Anaheim. Both times, I instinctively put out my hand for a handshake. I never felt so stupid in my life, but it was great nonetheless. That comes from Unsigned.
Yeah, and I mentioned you before, JR, the Healy guy still lives on. He's the singer in Roadhouse.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's the one-hit wonder he had. And
playing in that steel cage bar.
Yeah, exactly. Where the beer bottles do smash hammer, but for some reason the glass doesn't come through.
It's amazing, eh?
Jimmy says, I met George Clooney in Entebbe, Uganda in 2008. He was just as charming in person as he is on film. That's from Jimmy.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
There you go. Yeah, hey. Exactly. Did you hear the story about George Clooney?
So given 14 friends a million bold?
These are guys he grew up with. And at one point, believe it or not, to kids, George Clooney was a struggling actor trying to make ends meet. And he's had buddies that have been with him all the way through. And actually, I think loaned him money sort of to keep him going while he's trying to find his acting career. He ends up turning around, I guess, in the last year or something, and just gave them all and I think he actually delivered, I think he had a party at his house or something, and he had $1 million in cash he gave to, so it was like in a trunk or something. They all came to his house for a party or whatever, open up your trunk, there's $1 million he gave to each of his 14 closest friends.
Would that be the money they stole in Ocean's whatever the hell it is? Hey? Hey? All been marked.
The really greasy-looking hotel manager is still looking for him to this day.
And what do you do with that? You just siding up to a bank here and going in with $1 million cash?
You'd think you'd want one of those big, giant checks that people win when they win when they win a prize
money. It's not safe. How about an e-transfer?
Well, no, the first thing you're doing, Hammer, with that cash is you're putting it under your bed, because the minute it goes into your bank, Mr. Taxman also wants your social security number in the United States. So, this is where that would be interesting, what you end up trying to do with that money.
Jason texts, "Hey guys, I met Jason Alexander at Canada's Wonderland Water Park at the peak of Seinfeld's popularity. I asked for a picture. He politely declined as he was with his wife and kids. As I walked away, people kept yelling at him, 'Hey, Costanza, can't stand you.' I felt bad for him." Great show, guys. That's from Jason.
Wow. That's solid right there. Hey?
And again, things you don't, like, I just don't see, like Jason Alexander at Canada's Wonderland.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
But when you've got kids, you're forced to go.
No, I know, but rent it for the evening or something.
The entire Wonderland?
Yes.
I see him in khakis, a golf shirt, a fanny pack, some type of a hat on, enjoying the attention. You get into these things, JR. Like, you can never unlook him as an actor, no matter what role
he
plays, right?
Exactly.
Like, the power of that character he ended up playing.
Yeah, it's hard not to picture him eating that sundae at the U.S. Open with his face just smothered with chocolate, making a mess of himself on an episode of Seinfeld.
I'm not even a Seinfeld guy, but the funniest of all time was that whole shrinkage scene. That was the best one. Hey?
Or the one about
For Costanza.
Pleasuring yourself?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes,
okay.
The contact.
I'm out.
You got to hold it. That's Kramer.
That was the best. Yeah. Joel writes, "I was at the 1997 Canadian Open with my dad for a practice round. Once the ropes dropped and the crowds crossed the fairway, we decided to also cross. It just so happened that Payne Stewart was walking back from picking up a dropped head cover, and all three of us met right in the middle of the fairway. I shook his hand and said, 'Good luck today, Mr. Stewart.' And he said, 'Thank you, son. I appreciate that.' Classy guy, and that's why he was my dad's favorite golfer." That's from Joel.
What year? Brookline would have been what year, JR, for the Ryder Cup? And then
99.
Okay. I believe 2 years, whatever it was. I was at the ESPN zone in the old Baltimore Harbor, and I just remember it came on the TV. It was basically a map of the United States, and they were showing the flight plan for his plane, right?
That was a crazy story.
Everybody had died within, what, about 10 minutes? Carbon monoxide, and the plane...
One of the weirdest stories ever.
Yeah, right? and they were really afraid of where the plane was going to go,
They're going to shoot it down at one point,
well,
right?
I think they tipped the wing to send it to the ground. That's what they ended up doing, worrying about how far it would end up going, and I think there was some footage of the plane itself, and unfortunately, everybody's dead on board.
When you think about, and maybe it's because of the celebrity factor, and it's Payne Stewart, right? And so, that's the only time I've ever heard of that ever happening, ever. Which is, did we only hear about it because there was a celebrity on board? Or is this, I don't want to say a common circumstance, but has this happened at other times where people have gone up in private planes, something has happened in the cockpit, everybody dies, but the plane keeps flying until it runs out of gas?
No, right? never heard of that.
Never heard of that ever again.
No, I mean, we've heard of celebrity plane crashes, of course, but I don't think it was ever related to that. Very sad.
Dave in Richmond writes, "I was in Hawaii for a wedding a few years ago. The wedding party was on a 10-mile hike up a mountain to see a waterfall. About halfway up, there was a large man with a bad knee struggling on his way down. As we got close, I realized it was Rex Ryan.
That was
the year that he had lost a ton of weight. His extra skin was hanging off of him. His face was bright red, and he was in severe pain every step. The worst part was people recognized him and were trying to chat him up the whole time." That's from Dave in Richmond.
Sexy Rexy. Did he have anybody's feet in his mouth as well?
Oh, dear.
Hey?
Yeah, that's a bad picture.
That was when the feet fetish came along.
87 Canada Cup final in Hamilton. Before the game, I saw Wayne Gretzky walking down the sidewalk from the hotel to the rink. Like 2 feet away, there was nobody, and I mean nobody, on the sidewalk. It was just him and me, no security anywhere. So I said, "Good luck, Gretz." He said, "Thanks, man." I thought afterward, and for years ever since, imagine if I tripped or had some type of injury, whether it be accidental, and knocked off course. Imagine how the rest of the Canada would have hated me forever.
Wow.
At last, Steve Bartman. What
that
a game.
Sounds, yeah.
What a drive home to Ottawa after partying after the game. That's from Bruce.
Yeah, the scenes back then at the Cops Coliseum, the fans, the craziness. That almost sounds like a Hitman, JR. And I will say, again, haven't been around the G-Man twice, I was in awe to meet him. I'd never want to pretend not to be. But I will say, when you see these odd people, they're just watching the rest of the room as they come into a place. That, to me, is a really neat part, right? To just understand that, you know, there's very few people that can really pull the draw, obviously, like a Wayne Gretzky can when he enters a room.
I once took a leak beside Curtis Joseph at a Bare Naked Ladies concert.
Ah, nice.
Back to the bathroom.
My only bathroom. I was in Boston area doing a little scouting chair.
Yeah.
Went to a little club action after the game, and the guy comes in and is taking a leak next to me. It was Kenny Anderson, and he was bombed. And you remember him? He was a real good player at Georgia Tech.
Kenny, the basketball player, not the quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals.
And then I saw later where he had pretty much gotten rid of all of his cash. Not that it was that.
Yeah.
But he could have easily peed on the wall. He was having a bit of a struggle.
By the way, I had mentioned that the celebrity who I couldn't remember that I saw at the urinal at the Bruce Springsteen concert a couple of years ago. I had to text my wife to remind me of who it was.
Okay.
Michael Keaton. I was with my buddy Ken. Ken was at the urinal beside him. I was walking out and he said, "Did you see who I was taking a leak beside?" And I had turned around.
Man.
So I only saw Batman's back.
Yeah.
And he didn't have the cape on or anything.
No.
It was just Michael Keaton, a guy.
Are we going to take a leak? Bruce Wayne. Are we agreeing, guys, one of the bigger comebacks in the last 10 years of a guy that pretty much disappeared? And then was it Birdman? And I, again, another movie that I will watch constantly and just absolutely love it, of course, is The Founder. And he's not a young fella. Hey, he's into his 70s and has made a nice little comeback all the way. Yeah, anyways.
Hey, guys, I went to the Steelers-Colts game last November. I started chatting with people behind us. They ask, "Hey, where are you from?" And I said, "Ottawa." The girl behind me says, "Do you know Colin White? He's my cousin."
Oh,
crazy.
Nice.
We chatted hockey at a Steelers game.
Yeah.
Great folks. So there you go.
Yeah.
We'll put that more on the minor celebrity front or a celebrity only in Ottawa front.
Indirectly kind of knowing somebody, a bit of a conversation. Yeah.
Gentlemen, when I was working at Beaver Lumber, Damon Allen once came in with his Rough Riders truck and asked where the 4x4s were. I couldn't even say a word, just pointed in the direction. That's from Superstar Steve.
Yeah, so and being Damon Allen, I know he was good, JR, but it's kind of like being Keith Gretzky to Wayne Gretzky, right? I mean, Marcus Allen, one of the greatest.
Damon Allen's a big deal in Canada.
Was he?
He's one of the greatest quarterbacks in CFL history.
Okay.
I know you're all American and everything. let's see here. In 2006, I was coaching a junior girls rugby team at the National Championships in Winnipeg. We are in the elevator of quite a large hotel when in walks Gary Busey. I froze as there were six players with me in the elevator, and they all started giggling, and I couldn't think of anything witty to say that was either appropriate or topical. Gary Busey's eyes met mine. Uh-huh. He kind of smiled and walked out of the elevator and left. That's from Aaron and Carp. So
yeah,
there you go. Gary Busey, that was the motorcycle with the famous picture.
And also, that has not been good, right? Where his career is at. He was in original Eddie Murphy, 48-hour movies, right? Very popular at the time. Always mixed up him and Nick Nolte and one of the worst kind of shout outs or whatever. Remember Billy Crystal was doing, it must have been the big awards in the United States. I can't even think of it right now. Academy Awards. And all of a sudden, they're panning through the crowd, and they go to Gary Busey, and then he ends up using that line, "Oh, Gary Busey, you're still alive." And I just thought, come on, man. Do you really need to pile on at this time? Hey, And then last time we saw him, he was on Uncelebrity Apprentice. Hey, Gary Busey?
Was he?
Oh, yeah, it was not.
I think him and Jose Canseco
were rooming together.
Okay. Bruce and Briar Green writes, 1994, my 19th birthday in Halifax at the Liquor Dome. Doug Gilmore was there. I staggered up drunk and slurred something about it being my birthday, and I can't believe I'm meeting Doug Gilmore. He looks at his buddy, pulls out an 8x10, signs "Happy Birthday, Bruce," and I was on my way. That's from Bruce and Briar Green.
I texted back to Bruce, and I said,
"Wow, what a great story." And he texts back and goes, "By the way, who carries 8x10 with them to the bar?"
That is for Dougie. He also has his own website now where you can get those same things. Very strong game back in the day, JR, if you go to Halifax. Still there. They had a little bar area. One of them was my apartment. And if you want to go and get some good live music, Liquor Dome, very strong game back in the day.
One of my wife's favorite stories to tell, we were in the beer line at the final Tragically Hip concert here in Ottawa. There was some sort of holdup at the front of the line, so she went to investigate. Turns out that the older lady serving the drinks had carded Alicia Cuthbert, who had no ID. My wife settles the matter by Googling her picture. She got a selfie and one free beer for her efforts. I had to continue standing in line to get my drink.
and have to give a bit of a shout out and make fun of 24-hour Trombone about 5 years ago. We're out there. And late into the night, people head back to their hotel, and our former colleague, Melissa Lamb, who's now married to Nigel Romick, shows up at the hotel and says, "I don't have a key." They said, and she said, "Well, show us some ID." She said, "I don't have any ID." And Melissa said to them, "Just Google me." So there you go. And did get her key.
Moving on. Morning, gents. It was 5 years ago I was sitting in foul territory when Jose Bautista flipped his bat to the moon. After the game, we got loaded at a local establishment with the one and only Jeff O'Neill. That's good, right?
Yeah.
And comes from unsigned.
Yeah, I'm going to say for most people, right, JR, that's a short list. If there's guys you'd like to sit and just have some pints with, O-Dog would be high on a lot of people's lists.
I played softball on a mixed team in Manitic. Chris Kelly comes up to bat. Hey, wasn't Chris Kelly part of the Barhaven Mixed League at one point?
He did.
You played against him there.
Ball Parents Brown or whatever the guy used to talk about all the time?
That's right.
Yeah, so apparently he played in maybe left your league and moved to Manitic. Anyway, I tell the shortstop, if you ever take a hit, here's the one. It's a lawsuit. It's a lawsuit if you're looking for some dough. I was joking. Well, doesn't Chris Kelly hit a one-hopper right up into her face?
Oh.
I felt horrible. I walked over, said it was just a joke. When she finished crying, she laughed. Chris was great about it, but I felt like an ass. That comes from one side.
Yeah, jeepers. That's no fun.
No, not taking one of the chiclets.
Yeah. I used to work at the Rideau Center. We all saw all sorts of famous people. I spent a couple of weeks in Hollywood back in 1996 and met the one and only Ron Jeremy. That's from Mike's Basement.
Yeah.
Ron Jeremy again.
Yeah, not a good one. And back in the day, JR, I'm sure for a lot of people, if you're a hockey fan, the team stayed at the Westin Hotel and bought even over to Spark Street. I know Morgante's Menswear, but for any of the men's stores in there, even Harry Rosen, that was a pretty big stop for guys had a day off, hop into the mall, do a little shopping. So chance to meet lots of those guys back in the day.
Andre says, I peed next to Seth Rogen at the Pineapple Express premiere in Montreal. We shared a casual head nod and he left. Didn't wash his hands. That's from Andre.
Yeah. and that guy, I mean, he has, I think, one of the greatest lives. Like he's been stoned since he was, what, 12 years old?
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't take a day off, right?
No,
both,
absolutely.
He's allowed to be stoned when he works. And to the Farrelly brothers I mentioned earlier, that's the whole thing they'd when they do their movies, JR. They just get down in the basement. They get a group together to start hitting the pipe and coming up with ideas.
David in Barhaven, I had breakfast at a Greasy Spoon in Daytona, Florida. One day at the counter right beside me is Hank Aaron. He gave me a look like, don't even think about talking to me. That's from David in Barhaven. That's got to be disappointing. You think of Hank Aaron, like, all-time great guy. Wow.
Yeah, and funny, the celebrity sports dinner they have, JR, had for years here in Ottawa. It was interesting, right, from athlete to athlete. And Ian and I had a chance to meet Pete Rose, and you kind of wonder what he's going to be like. He hopped on, was awesome. I remember we were interviewing Mark Messier, and whoever the hell his handler is wanting to know what time it's going to be, how much. And the guy that was certainly, I'd say probably the least connected at the time was Bo Jackson. You know, it was more like, hey, I'm here. I don't really want to talk to you. Just let me put my time in. I'll go up on the stage and do my thing.
Check, please.
Yeah, exactly. And where the hell is Ottawa, Canada?
Right. I used to be a chef at a restaurant in Vernon, B.C. One night, Ray Liotta, Julia Stiles, and Anthony Hopkins come in. They were in town shooting a movie that's on Netflix. I forget what it's called. Anthony and Julia were friendly. Ray, not so much.
Yeah. Ray Liotta.
Had the bad acne scars.
Yeah, very much so. And it was always all about
good
the big
fellas.
Good fellas, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And
he's got a persona that he's got to live up to.
There's another one right there. One of the all-time favorites.
Scott writes to JR's point about what everyone has to do. Years ago, I was at Carleton, and the Dalai Lama's brother was invited to give a guest lecture to over 1,000 students. Sure enough, 15 minutes before he takes the stage, he walks into the washroom and takes up the spot at the urinal right beside me. First and last time I've ever gone to the bathroom next to a high holy man. Cheers, gents. I come from Scott.
So, the Dalai Lama?
No, the Dalai Lama's brother, he writes here. I'm not sure that counts.
Does that, and would you even know, like, could they have any Dalai Lama show up? Do you have any idea
the
Dalai Lama's
brother?
He could
sell me on that he's his brother, and I wouldn't know any
better. No, exactly. Yeah. That's what a good gig that is. Even the brother gets speaking engagements.
All right, let's take a quick break. Tell you what, take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll do a quick This Day in Sports History. We did the big ones, right? This is the anniversary of the Patrick Roy meltdown that eventually led to his trade from Montreal 25 years ago today, believe it or not. And as well, the anniversary of the passing of Jean Béliveau as well. So we'll come back to This Day in Sports History, celebrate some sports birthdays before we turn things over to the boys from In the Box. Coming up after 10, right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Oh, there's so many of these. I'm sorry we can't get to all of them. I met Dan Bylsma at the Pearl Street Grill in Buffalo before a Bisons baseball game. I told him I was from Ottawa. He said, sorry to hear that. Funny guy. That's from Kevin.
Oh, boys, Bowling Green alumni. I shouldn't be saying that.
Boys, I took a pee beside Jason Spezza at the Bulldog in the Kanata Centrum. It was the same night he undressed the Montreal defender and for the highlight reel goal. Yeah, well, everybody. So that was...
That's Sheldon Surrey?
Sheldon Surrey, and was it Jose Theodore was the goalie, I think? That's one of the most famous goals in Sens history. Yeah, I think you're talking about regular season.
Yeah, you got to finish it off. It's like Carlson to Hoffman. Nobody remembers unless you tuck her home.
Trevor in Wakefield, when I worked landscaping in Calgary, my boss was good friends with Danny Heatley, and for our staff party, the heater showed up to play street hockey and gave us all a bunch of synergy sticks. He was so good, even with a tennis ball. That comes from Trevor in Wakefield. Danny Heatley, not really well thought of here in Ottawa, but there you go. Good guy.
Last time I saw a video of him, he was cruising around his lake by himself in the boat.
Yeah.
Also set up shop, had the entire Sens dressing room, which was part of his buyout.
Chad writes, I sat next to Jerry Rice on a plane once. He put his headphones on right away and gave me a clear message. Do not engage. That's from Chad.
Our good friend Jeff Gaudette ended up helping with that sports dinner, and Amir and I had gone to it, and then we were sitting in the bar afterwards, JR, and Jerry Rice came in the year he was there. He came over, and you could tell at that point, it was like, okay, I've had my time. But he was actually gracious enough to come over and talk a little bit. Again, another one of those people, I was a little surprised at how small he was, right? Like, I don't know what my expectations were.
Yeah.
But you could tell that
slender,
he was...
Slender, right?
Yeah,
he's fairly
slender.
Tall.
But very fit. And what I guess happens in the thing or the dinner, it doesn't matter. But his interview that year, and I can't remember who was doing it, but he was really good. He was very engaging once he got up on the stage.
Yeah. All right, this day in sports history, I'll quickly power through a few of these. This December the 2nd, it was on this day in 1962 at the 50th Grey Cup game at Exhibition Stadium in Toronto. Winnipeg beat Hamilton 28-27. The game actually began on December 1st, finished on December 2nd because they had to hold it over because of fog, what became known as the Fog Bowl, finished up on this day in 1962.
Well, that's, I think of fog moments in the NFL to CFL, and I guess the most famous from a hockey perspective is the playoffs between
Philly and Buffalo
back in the day. The old odd, not a whole lot of air conditioning come May. Right?
I would say the thickest fog I saw at a football game was when the Eagles played the Bears in a playoff game one year. This would be, 20 years ago or whatever. It's the thickest fog I've ever seen. Couldn't even see 10 yards down the field. Should have called the game. Eagles ended up losing. It was an outrage. on this day in 1969, NHL announced that it was expanding to Buffalo and Vancouver. The new teams would be the 13th and 14th members of the league, starting into play in 1970. Of course, neither in now 50 years have ever won a Stanley Cup, Buffalo and Vancouver.
Did they do the draw for the lottery just on a wheelchair? And they end up with Gilbert Perreault and Dale Talon went to Vancouver. Yeah. Dale never... overly adored by the Vancouver fans.
On this day in 1985... Chicago Bears head coach Mike Ditka and defensive coordinator Buddy Ryan almost came to blows at halftime in what eventually would be a 34-26 loss by the Bears to the Dolphins on Monday Night Football. That was the Bears' only loss that entire season. Of course, that was the Monsters of the Midway defense.
Yeah, I'm not sure I like Buddy Ryan's chances. And the next time we saw Buddy, was he with the Houston Oilers and fought?
Kevin Gilbride.
Yeah, remember that? Those are sloppy fights with guys like that, though, right? Nothing really happens.
No,
you
never connect. On this day in 2000, the Ottawa GGs beat the Regina Rams 42-39 to win the Vanier Cup at Sky Dome in Toronto. GGs led 35-10 at halftime. Phil Cote completed 16 of 18, ran for two touchdowns, was named the offensive player of the game, and Scott Gordon of the GGs was named the defensive player of the game. So that happened on this day 20 years ago.
Now I got nothing Vanier Cup related, JR, other than the legendary story of Cody Ceci's dad playing in the Vanier Cup. And was he playing for McMaster? Would that be accurate?
Guelph, maybe?
Was it Guelph? Okay, one of the Toronto area schools. Yeah. There's been some articles about that.
Yep. Sports birthdays today. Monica Seles is 47. Of course, won 9 Grand Slam titles. Unfortunately, more remembered maybe for that incident involving fan who came out of the stands and stabbed her on the court. And that derailed her career for a time.
No, it really did. As you just said, I mean, she was a hell of a player right in there at the time with Steffi Graf. And that's all. And I'm sure changed a whole lot of the security protocol for tennis.
Born on this day, so celebrating her 42nd birthday today, is Mayel Ricker. Oh, you're going, Myall Rickert. Should I know that name? Myall Rickert was a Canadian snowboarder who won the Olympic gold in Vancouver in 2010 in snowboard cross. So that was the first year they did that. That's the one, well, on snowboard, right, where they go and there's like four of them on the course at a time. Yeah. I love that one.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah.
All the ones they have brought in, they brought in a bunch of new sports. Yeah. That is the favorite one for me that they brought in.
Well, there was one of the races. I don't know if it was the men or the women. Do you remember the one person was celebrating?
Yes, the American girl.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay.
Went over the last jump and then was like, yeah, I got this, and then wipes out.
The person cruises right by them, hey?
Celebrating a 37th birthday today. It looks like he hasn't lost much. Is Aaron Rodgers, two-time NFL MVP, Super Bowl MVP, back when the Packers won in 2010, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And has not missed a beat, still going strong at the age of 37.
Yeah, just past 50,000 yards here on the weekend.
Yep. Yeah. Hockey birthdays. Elias Lindholm of the Calgary Flames turns 26 today. He's a really, really good player,
I got to say.
Yeah. Power play, penalty kill, first line center now. I think they're going to actually take him off the line and put him at center. The Sutter twins, Ron and Rich, are 57 today. Ron played 200 more games and had 200 more points. Was drafted 4th overall by the Flyers. Richie went 10th overall to Pittsburgh. They actually played together in Philly and then a little bit later on in St. Louis.
Yeah, and remember one of them, I think, playing in Vancouver, JR?
That was Richie, I think.
Yeah, neither of them real good. That was a whole lot of the family name back in the day. But good fellows, and like the rest of the Sutter brothers, have stayed in some capacity in the game, either scouting or coaching.
Sergei Zhultok was born on this day in 1972, of course, passed away in 2004. Spent 1 year here in Ottawa, playing for the Sens.
Yeah, and think back to scouting. It was, well, and unfortunately it passed away. Vegas used to bring Radek Bonk and Patrick Steffen. The 1 year, it was Ruslan Soley and Sergei Zhultok playing for the team, JR. So you go and scout. Surprisingly, that year, Anaheim drafted Ruslan in the first round. I can't remember what happened with Zhultok. And the sad story on him that doesn't get talked about very often, he was actually in Minsk at the time when he died. And he ended up having a heart attack in the hallway and just basically laid there and died. Like They didn't have any ability. And I can't remember what North American, but a former NHL player that had played with him was over playing in this charity game. And just remember him talking about it and obviously being extremely emotional.
Joel Ward turns 40 today, of course, was in the OHL. Spent 4 years playing Canadian University hockey at Prince Edward Island.
Incredible.
Got signed as a free agent, ended up playing over 700 NHL games with Nashville, Washington, San Jose. Went to the Cup Final a couple of times. Never ended up winning, but real, real good player. And I think he just got signed as an assistant coach somewhere, either Vegas down in the minors or San Jose.
And three or four guys' names that I always think of, JR, are those guys back to Mike Tomlach. And then probably the best of the bunch was Stevie Ruchin out of Western, right? Played in Anaheim. And then what's the big tall? Oh, Corey Cross. That would be my power ranking.
Kelly Buchberger is 54 today, 1,200 NHL games, mostly with Edmonton, won a Stanley Cup in 1990, had the, those lips that you really wanted, had the punchable lips, I like to say, right?
Those big lips that you just
wanted to punch him in
the face. I think you're talking as a Flames fan, though, right?
Yeah,
because Bucky was always loved, eh?
Everybody really liked him. Very punchable lips, so. Paul Holmgren is 65 today, played more than 500 career games, of course, mostly with the Philadelphia Flyers, went on to management, and doing what now?
You know what in Philadelphia you get reshuffled, right? You just go up to go up to a floor above or a floor below. You just kind of hang around. He always had the look, right? Like he had, and I remember there's that sequence, very good friends with Terry Murray. There's a great brawl back in the day between the Caps and the Flyers. He's got the hockey stick in his hand, wants to get after Terry Murray. He's one of those guys I would say you put on that scary list, right? Like he had the real solid look when he got upset and certainly had some issues in his personal life that he straightened out and very well liked and very well respected.
And last but not least on the birthday list for today, December 2nd, Jerry Cheevers turns 80 years old.